different people will have different shows where one friend of mine collected DVDs for the longest time, tons and tons of years of DVDs. And then nowadays it's very hard to find someone with a DVD player. And so he put all of them in his Plex library. And so if he ever wants to share a movie with me, I can watch it on Plex, and that's the way we do it. And then you can also put home movies on there. And then the Plex even has its own live TV channels that I've tuned into on occasion. And it's just nice to have and have so many options. And I like the aggregation of services. It does feel like we're kind of reinventing cable, where just like everything is all in one package.
Visit skillsoft.com/events to register for an exclusive webinar on preparing your workforce to adapt to emerging cyber threats. Explore the multi-pronged approach they take at Skillsoft on Tuesday, April 19th, 2022 at 2 p.m. Eastern. Register at skillsoft.com/events today. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast, a place to talk all things software and technology. I am your host, Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow, joined as I often am by my co-host, Cassidy Williams. Hi, Cassidy.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Cassidy is the head of developer experience and education at remote.com. which is a very cool company, especially in this day and age, as so many companies are going remote and distributed. Speaking of international affairs, Cassidy, you are preparing a very cool project. I know you want to shout it out, so let's plug it. What are you doing, and how? What's it all about?
Yeah, and so myself and Sarah Vieira, we were talking and decided to put together a conference to benefit Ukraine amongst all the troubles that are happening over there with the Russian attacks. And so
Yes. We
honestly whipped this up in a couple weeks, and it was great. And she built the website, and I basically wrote the blog posts and edited code here and there. And we got some people at Remote to help us. And we made this event, and we've got some really awesome speakers. You can find people from the core team of React, from Vue. We've got back-end tracks and front-end tracks, and we're trying to raise money that'll all go directly to NGOs in Ukraine that are going to be helping people get the aid that they need. And right. It's very exciting. In the first 24 hours that we announced it, we passed our goal of 15K donated. And so we increased the goal. And so if you want to check it out, it's a free conference and it's at devsforukraine.io.
Very cool. Yes. Regardless of your politics, I think we can all agree war is a terrible thing. And, you know, it's great mm-hmm. when help goes to people who need it, people whose lives have been dislocated or disrupted by the conflict. So that's pretty awesome. We will put it in the show notes and folks can check it out. When is it happening?
It's happening at the end of April. And so April 25th and 26th.
Okay. I have some fun news that kind of ties back to a few things we've talked about before. GitHub can now auto block commits containing API keys and auth tokens. So this is kind of on, you know, this larger trend that we've been talking about of to what degree do developers trust GitHub or NPM to take care of them? To what degree should they trust them? And to what degree should those platforms kind of take some of the responsibility out of your hands? So I guess, in your mind, how does something like this work? And is this a win-win?
Yeah, I think this is something where I'm sure that they're doing all kinds of cool engineering under the hood for detecting what those kinds of keys look like. And I'm sure there's plenty of AI figuring out what a key might look like. But the fact that you can stop that from happening.
Yeah.
I'm sure many developers are just like, well, you just don't commit keys. How would you do that? I think many people have accidentally committed a key at least once in their life. And yes. so this is going to be great just for security in general, for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was at DJI, we had some back and forth about a bug bounty program. It's all in public, so feel free to talk about it. And it involved, some API keys and other things that should not have been left in a public AWS bucket. And that's another one I think happens a lot. This is not for everybody. Obviously, if you're just a basic user, it's not going to apply to you. It's for folks who are in like a GitHub enterprise cloud. You know, your company has opted in and it's scanning all your code. Well, now I can do, you know, these extra things for you. So yeah, I guess we're moving on here in the news. Another thing that we wanted to touch on, I thought this was kind of fun. Obviously, Fast.co, it's not fun that they had to lay off some folks, but it's a big, beautiful Airtable that their fellow coworkers and technologists put together. And instead of like a "so sorry to see you go" blog, it's just a "hey, you can hire all of these people," and they've each got their own little card and their resume and everything like that. So
yeah, that's great. I was really surprised to see Fast shut down. It felt it's a pun. It felt fast. How yeah. Fast shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is hard to say, but yeah, because they were such a VC sweetheart for a little while, and I know some people who had worked there, had left there and stuff, and so I'm not utterly shocked, but right. I am definitely like, oh dang, that was quite the turnaround there.
I do think as a former sort of like business technology venture reporter, the tide is kind of going out. You know, there was years sort of leading up to the pandemic where just like the valuations got kind of bananas. Mm-hmm. You know, there were the WeWorks of the world. But then during the pandemic, they got even more bananas. You know, there were like just billion-dollar companies being minted left and right. And now there's been sort of a reversion to the mean where a lot of folks are not willing to give funding for that next private round at that eye-watering valuation unless you've got, you know, a pretty sustainable business model. It's no longer just, well, if you've got growth, like, here you go, you know, blank check kind of thing. So,
go.
You know, that's the thing I think software engineers kind of get caught up in, because it's not, I mean, you know, some software engineers start their own companies or are very business savvy, but a lot of times you go to work for a company during a sort of a moment of hype or a moment of exuberance. And then there's the dot-com bubble, or there's, you know, kind of what's happening now. And that's unfortunate when that happens to people.
It's wild to see some companies raise so fast and then some take a lot longer. Where, for example, remote where I work, we announced our Series C today. And it's very exciting that we announced it, and excited about that. Can't complain. But it feels fast, and it's something where we had raised a Series B last year, middle of last year, and then they're only two and a half-ish years old. They're not a very old company, and so it was kind of a quick turnaround. Meanwhile, a company that I worked for a while ago, oh gosh, 7 years ago, they just raised a Series C, and They're a lot older than where remote is, but they're at about the same level now funding wise. And so there's no rhyme or reason to it. It feels like it's much more of an art than a science, depending on the company right. and what they do and what.
Well, you had said, I think on an earlier episode, that remote, you know, went from 30 people to 900 people as employees, right? And so then obviously
fast. Yeah.
You know, if you're trying to fill demand, if the demand is there, you're hiring employees, well then, you know, obviously after a year, you know, with what is that? That's 200 times the employees, or 300 times the employees, you know, you had before, 30 times the employees you had before. You need to be able to sustain that burn rate. Stack Overflow is kind of the opposite. I mean, it ended up going to like a Series E or something like that, but it took 12, 13 years to get there. And now we're in this crazy position, which we kind of, I think, I appreciate, of being owned by a public company that has a lot of money, but not being like a public company where the share price goes up and down and you stress out about that. So
right.
It
doesn't affect your compensation regularly.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, once a year, you know, if we do well, like our little company will be reevaluated, and that's always good for employees and folks who worked hard. But it's not as like stressful as, oh, everyone's decided tech stocks are bad, and now, you know, all this, you know, house shopping I did is no longer relevant.
Yeah. Which is privileges. Actually happening with a lot of people I know.
Yes. Yeah, maybe we'll get into another day, but it's hard not to get ahead of yourself and hard not to get excited. People in this world of software right. are extremely well compensated, and you say, well, I've got this stock option plan, and it's clear that I'll be getting X amount of money over the next 3 years, and I'll go to the bank and they'll say, we'll lend you money for a house based on this, you know, amount of money. But then if the stock price gets cut in half, you know, all of a sudden the calculus on that loan can change. And it can be, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Last one on the news side, and then we'll jump into the topic of the day. Plex.tv. Are you a user, or know anyone who's a user?
I
know some people who swear
Plex.
By Plex. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I use Plex a lot.
So I thought this was interesting. They want to be the super hub where, you know, all of your streaming services are connected to it. And I just go in and search once. It gives me universal search. This is something I do need. I have an Apple TV. It does okay with it, but like I could certainly see it could be better. And then obviously the joy of Plex is mix that with, you know, an offline or a personal library of stuff you own that isn't on streaming. This came up the other day. My son wanted to watch the Clone Wars animated show that was only ever on Cartoon Network and for whatever reason is owned by like Paramount and six other companies and so will never be on streaming. So I had to go like find him a bunch of bootlegs on YouTube, but you know, I could have also bought the DVD and then I could put it on Plex and then we could watch it whenever we want.
Right.
So how do you use it? Like what do you get out of it?
Honestly, it's kind of similar where a friend of mine, I have actually a few friends with Plex service and I just kind of cling to all of them where different people will have different shows where one friend of mine collected DVDs for the longest time, tons and tons of years of DVDs. And then nowadays it's very hard to find someone with a DVD player. And so he put all of them in his Plex library. And so if he ever wants to share a movie with me, I can watch it on Plex and that's the way we do it. And then you can also put home movies on there. And then that Plex even has its own live TV channels that I've tuned into on occasion. And it's just nice to have and have so many options. And I like the aggregation of services. It does feel like we're kind of reinventing cable where just like everything is all in one package. But
you
it's still
channels
exciting.
To find what you want to watch. It's so annoying.
Yeah. Oh gosh. But I am excited for it because I tend to hop between apps where if it's something that I have on like Netflix, but I was watching Hulu earlier and then I wanted to watch Plex for this or something for that. Plex doing this and consolidating everything reminds me of the services like Movie Anywhere or Movies Anywhere. Have you seen those ones? And it's basically instead of subscriptions, it's movies that you own digital copies of, and it can combine like Fandango and Vudu and all of these other platforms, Amazon and stuff, where you can put it all in one place. And I have one of those accounts where I admit I don't own as many movies, but I have a few. And so it's nice to have them all in one hub connected into one place. Plex doing that, I like it. It makes my life a bit easier.
Yeah, there used to be these awesome workarounds. I can't remember the name of the company. We'll have to look it up. But it was like right around the time when Netflix was getting ready to do streaming and people still got DVDs in the mail, where like they bought all the DVDs and then you could stream it from anywhere and it was okay because they were renting it to you and then playing it, that like physically the disc would have to start spinning somewhere. And then they can stream it to you. It was like this really funny piracy workaround. I think the other thing, obviously, if anything gets posted on Hacker News, somebody has to, like, the thread has to be negative. But a lot of people there were sort of saying the hilarious thing about Plex now is that it does, in many cases, require like a cloud login. And if you don't have internet, then you're not going to be able to access your local files. And so folks were pointing out another one called Jellyfin or Jellyfish. So developers have already moved on to the more, you know, the more pure version of Plex.
Yeah. Plex does have like a pro premium account thing where if you do want offline access, you can get it, but you have to own the media. And so if I wanted to see my friend's DVDs, for example, I'm not able to see those because I have a pro account. But if it were on my own server, you can use that.
Very cool. All right, let us switch over to the topic of the day. I think this one I'll just run you through real quick and we'll sort of take a temperature check. And then maybe when we have more folks on the show, we can dive a little deeper. But this was a security list. It takes you in some pretty deep directions across what you're doing, what you've got installed, how you do software, how you do hardware. But I thought, yeah, it was just kind of interesting as like a gut check. So use a strong password. I'm going to say, yes, I do that. And sometimes I just use like the auto-generated one. But when I use the auto-generated one, that's like from Apple or Chrome, then I am using a browser to save my passwords, which is not safe. So I can't have it both ways, I guess, there. That was the first sign that I'm not doing it right. Sign up for breach alerts. No way, man. Update my passwords periodically, only if the system is forcing me to. Don't use a 4-digit PIN. Well, sometimes people ask me to make a 4-digit PIN. Should I just say no? What do people do? Avoid face unlock? Oh, that's an advanced category. I don't know. Looking at this, I felt I'm not really keeping myself that safe.
I do a few of these where I use a password manager and generate strong passwords and I try to rotate them somewhat regularly. Mm-hmm. I recently rotated passwords and forgot to connect my email accounts after that and lost like a month worth of emails. So I'm not great at it. But I do think that this is a generally good list of all the things that we should be doing. I feel like there's no way to be perfectly secure with anything, but you can just try to be as secure as you can be. And I was just talking with parents and family members and stuff recently, like about what two-factor authentication means, how can you do it? Because they had a neighbor that recently someone hacked into their bank account because they didn't have two-factor auth. It was just a password and it was a shared family password. Like there's a lot of things that you can do that will stop most things from going completely wrong.
Yes. Yeah, 2FA is the best.
Yeah, two-factor auth, you should do it. Something that I actually learned recently related to this that blew my mind. Someone I know is working a lot with Word files recently and kind of hacking Word documents, which is a very specific thing to work on. But they learned a lot about how the encryption of Word documents work, and it's very secure, so much so that he got on a call and was ranting to me and saying, if you put all of your passwords in a Word doc and made it an encrypted, secure, password-protected Word doc, that's just as good as something like 1Password because of how secure it is. And I thought that was fascinating as he was talking about like how it works under the hood.
Cool. Yeah, I bet it is because, you know, they probably have a ton of government contracts that go to a pretty high level and they like want those people to use Microsoft Word and Excel, you know, for their clandestine top secret tier level only information.
Office 365 for the government.
The one I love here was to understand your browser fingerprint, because to me, this is always the one where it's like, no matter what you do, it's like the battle of nature evolution. It's like, there's the move and the counter move, the measure and the counter measure. Like, do everything you can to stop people from knowing who you are. Use all this different stuff. But if you use the same device and the same browser in the same time zone every day, the data brokers will get you. They'll figure out who you are. They'll start targeting you with ads for shoes. Like, it's just, you know, like, that's, I don't want to be like changing my phone out, you know, or like rotating my device. That's just like, I can't commit to that. But
I saw this thing and I can't tell you where the article was from. It was definitely like an anecdotal thing, but there was this person and she was saying, okay, I'm going to follow. It wasn't this security checklist, but it was a security checklist, and followed it to the extreme where she only browsed on VPNs and rotated VPN stuff. She only used privacy respecting browsers and only used search engines that were very private and stuff. And basically like, went sort of off the grid while still being able to use the internet and stuff by using everything completely privately. And she ended up being contacted by the FBI because they were just like, who are you and what are you doing? Because she was so secure that it was suspicious.
Right. Exactly. That's so funny. Yeah. You're trying to everything you can to mask yourself. And that just makes you, it's like,
suspicious suddenly.
Exactly. You're so suspicious. All right. Well, I will share the link in the show notes. If you want to leave a comment or send us an email, let us know how you scored. We'll do a little bit more of this when we have some more hosts on, because I think this is a pretty interesting checklist and makes me realize that I do some of this stuff, like you said, is second nature for me because of my age, whereas it's not for like my parents' generation. And I wonder if people who are younger than us, some of this stuff is even more second nature. All right, let's jump to a lifeboat, a few tech recs, and we are out of here. All right. Awarded yesterday to Joseph Sieber. What's a regex that matches all numbers except 1, 2, and 25? That one seems more like a puzzle, but I will include it in the show notes if you want to do a little brain teaser. My tech rec of the week, it is called the TENS, T-E-N-S. I'm not really sure what that stands for. It is a little box and you plug it in and then you put little patches on you and it stimulates your muscles with electricity. And
I just saw that recently too. It seems interesting.
It's kind of like what acupuncture does is like increase blood flow to a certain place. So if you don't want to do acupuncture at home, because that seems kind of dangerous, you put it on some muscles that are sore, achy or whatever, and it basically just stimulates them. That gets blood flowing through. Blood flowing through clears out old stuff, inflammation, and brings in healthy stuff. So yeah, it's been really nice for my back and shoulders, and I will include a link. It's technology. Okay.
Yeah, sure. Mine is, my recommendation is a service called Covitar. And it's something that's pretty neat, where what it is you sign up and request an avatar for yourself, and they will have an artist draw something for you, like a real human will draw an avatar of you, and you can request changes and stuff up to a certain point, and then you can use that avatar on various websites and stuff. And they have different versions of it where they can make graphics and comics for you. It's a really nice little service, and I got one for myself, and it's a good drawing. I'll totally use it, and I've already changed my profile picture on a few things to that, and it's nice if you don't want to use a photo of yourself.
I love marketplaces that help creative people get paid. Do you go in here and pick a like aesthetic, like a genre, or how do you
decide? You can choose a few different art styles that you prefer, and then they'll match you with an artist that does that art style.
Nice.
Yeah, and they can do like various like apparel and masks and things like that too.
Yes, I see now. The anime version of myself coming soon. Excellent. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. I am Ben Popper. I'm the director of content here at Stack Overflow. You can always find me on Twitter at Ben Popper. You can always email us podcast@stackoverflow.com with questions or suggestions. And if you like the show, leave us a rating and a review on the podcast platform of your choice. It really helps.
I'm Cassidy Williams, head of developer experience and education at Remote. You can find me at Cassidoo, CASSIDOO, on most things.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye.